Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 18th of October. First, may we again thank you from the bottom of our hearts for our wonderfully successful pledge drive, which ended last week, and we together raised more than $1,025,000. Isn't that something? $1,025,000 from nearly 10,000 members to pay for the programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We also welcome 2,000 new members, and we thank you so much for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. After you listen to this hour, I guarantee you that you will never again think of a plastic bag in the way that you perhaps didn't think about plastic bags before this hour, or about our consumption of plastic. The average American uses about 500 plastic bags each year for an average of 12 minutes before they are discarded. 2 million plastic bottles are consumed in this country every 5 minutes, and less than 25% are recycled. The average American contributes 800 pounds of packaging waste to landfills per year. Don't you hate those packaging things that have layer of plastic and you can't even open the darn things and you stab it with a kitchen knife and then you cut your hand because you're trying to rip off the plastic? It drives you crazy. And of course, you wonder, where does all this plastic go? Well, a lot of it goes into the ocean, and it is estimated that 100,000 marine mammals and seabirds die each year from becoming strangled or from ingesting plastic debris. This weekend here in Milwaukee, the film Bag It, Is Your Life Too Plastic? Will be shown at the Urban Ecology Center, which is a very special place in the city of Milwaukee. The special guest and the star of the film will be there and also with us. Jeb Barrier is joining us this hour. He describes himself as an average American guy. And in this film, he makes a pledge to stop using plastic bags. He travels really all over the world and all over the United States to places that are trying to ban the use of plastic bags or charge money as a deposit when you use plastic bags. And he's gone to different countries where the use of these bags have been eliminated and has some remarkable things to say about what happens when people eliminate the use of plastic. Jeb is the host for a morning television show on Telluride TV. Before that, he was on air personality for Plum TV, where he won an Emmy Award for his coverage of the 2008 Democratic Convention. He works as an actor and a director, doing theater, film, and television commercials. He was a member of the National Shakespeare Company in New York City in the mid-90s, and he also produces the annual Telluride Comedy Festival. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him during the course of this hour. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Jeb. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. I did think about plastic bags, but I will never, ever see any plastic bag, be it on the street or in my house, in the same way after I've seen this film. It makes you so aware, not only of plastic bags, but of the omnipresent use of plastic in our society.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea, and that actually is what happened to me making the film. You know, we use so many things, not just plastic bags, but we use so many things every day without even thinking about it. Coffee cups, plastic bags, plastic forks, and we throw them away, and we don't really, you know, it's just normal.
Right.
We don't think about where they go, and we don't think about what the impact of everybody using so much stuff every day, the cumulative effect of that and what's happening.
And isn't it remarkable that we use a lot of this for 10 seconds or even, if that, mm-hmm. maybe 5 seconds. You use it and you throw it out.
Yeah, and it's something that has sort of, I think, crept up on us. I mean, 50 years ago, people didn't do that. And we've just become accustomed through convenience. The stuff is so cheap, and we're sort of a to-go society now. And it's also, people have cleanliness issues, and, you know, it is complicated.
Right.
But it's become really, I think it's become overboard.
So what did we do 50 years ago?
Well, 50 years ago, I don't think, first of all, plastic really didn't become a mainstream consumer, especially a throwaway item, until the 60s and really into the 70s when it became really common. So I think people just reuse stuff. It's kind of now that's like a new idea, but obviously for hundreds, thousands of years, we didn't have all this disposable stuff, and so we had to, if we used something, we had to reuse it.
It's interesting, you ask many people in the film what plastic is, what plastic bags are made of, and it's hard for many of us to come up with an answer.
Mm-hmm. It's even hard, you know, in the film, we ask people what a plastic bag is made of, and different people have different answers for us. Different experts have different answers. So, you know, it's not just the layman who doesn't know what's in plastic. It's we asked people what a bag is made of, and half the people told us it was petroleum, and half the people told us it was natural gas, which is sort of odd, you know.
Right.
That you can't even come up with a straight answer for that.
Right. So what is the answer?
Well, I never really got to the bottom of it. Apparently, you can do it with both. And we've been told definitively, I swear to you, I've been told definitively both answers by people who should know. So, you know, if anyone who's going to call in, maybe I'm sure we'll have somebody who will say it possibly can be made of both. But, you know, the plastic, so then you've got your plastic, your normal plastic. It's a petroleum-based product. They can make it of other things like starch, vegetable, you know, the vegetable-based plastic.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got into what else is in plastic and what other chemicals are in there and how can they affect our health.
Right. It must have all started when when you're talking, I'm thinking of Dustin Hoffman being given the advice in The Graduate. Plastics.
Uh-huh.
And that was when it started, pretty much, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Plastics. That was it. You also had, which I found really gripping part of the film, that you and your partner discovered that you were going to have a baby when this documentary was being made. So you really looked at the omnipresence of plastics and how some of this may be very harmful to developing fetuses.
Yeah, and that was something that I had no idea. Yeah, I'd never heard of these chemicals that we look at in the film. Bisphenol A is one of them, and phthalates is the other. And, you know, we were working on this about 2 years ago. Now it's becoming a little more, you know, people are finding out more about this stuff, but I'd never heard of that. And as we were working on the film and I found out we were going to have a baby, boom, everything just escalated and became a lot more meaningful and a lot more personal. And I really wanted to know where these chemicals were, you know, what kind of products they were in and how they could possibly affect my baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really frightening. It's frightening that I don't consider myself, like I say in the film, I wasn't any sort of expert and I wasn't a rabid environmentalist, so I didn't make it my business to know this stuff. But it's frightening that an average person who reads and watches the news, and, you know, I read the newspaper, that I didn't know that there were chemicals in plastic and in other products that could really cause permanent harm to my baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's insane.
Well, a lot of that investigative reporting has just been done in the last couple of years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you know, people have known about these chemicals. There are people who have been shouting about it, but it's just, boy, it just takes a while. And the other thing that we found is that obviously the industry, the chemical industry, or people in the chemical industry, are trying to still say that these chemicals are safe. And then there's scientists and doctors who have evidence that they're not.
You had your body tested. What's that chemical you had in you? I can't remember the name of it.
Well, those are the two chemicals. So just for people who aren't familiar with this stuff, there's a chemical called bisphenol A. It's used in plastic. It's also used in other things, but it's in polycarbonate plastic. It's a hardener. And then there's a chemical called, or a group of chemicals called phthalates.
Phthalates, yeah.
And phthalates are plasticizers. They soften plastic. They make it sort of rubbery. Both of those things are called endocrine disruptors. And they do a lot of things. They believe that they do a lot of things to humans that aren't good. But one of the things that they're pretty certain about is that they disrupt hormones. And so that's what you really have to worry about, especially if a woman is pregnant, okay, and she's going to have a boy. They know that at a certain point early in the pregnancy, that fetus is going to get a surge of testosterone if it's going to be a boy. And that starts it sort of on its journey to being masculine. And if these chemicals are in the mother's body, the body thinks in some way these things mimic estrogen, and then they block, you know, I'm not a scientist, so I can't maybe explain it exactly right, but they block this surge of testosterone enough that it alters the fetus's development. So what they're finding is, and they know that with phthalates, when they study pregnant women and their level of phthalates, if they have a certain level in them, they're coming. Boys are coming out partially feminized.
Hmm. Isn't that something?
So that's a real. That's a very real thing.
Right. And how would the mother get those chemicals in her body? How did you get those chemicals in your body?
Well, they're found. Actually, phthalates are found in a lot of products, beauty products, shampoos. It's used to carry fragrance. So it's in some sunscreens. It's in a lot of sort of fragrancy, floral-smelling products may have phthalates in them.
Hmm.
And then it's also used in plastic, you know, soft plastic. So they did actually ban phthalates in children's toys, finally, after a long time. But, you know, what was happening for a while was bisphenol A, which is the other chemical, was in baby bottles, right?
Yes, right.
Hard plastic baby bottles. And phthalates were in the baby bottle nipple.
Oh, my gosh.
And so you take that and you have mothers all over America, all over the world, putting formula in their baby bottle, putting it in the microwave.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, this is a huge scale issue. And so what we did in the film to sort of, in a fun way, show how easy it is to expose yourself to these chemicals, I did a little test where it was a before and after. I would test my levels of those two chemicals. And in those 2 days, I stayed in a friend's apartment, and I just inundated myself with foods and products that we thought would have, you know, either one of these chemicals in them. So it's kind of it was a stunt. You know, we thought it would be funny, but at the same time, it would show you that, hey, in 2 days, if you use all these products that a lot of us use every day, your levels can go from, you know, A to Z, whatever
mm-hmm.
those will be.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
They sure did. Jeb Barrier is our guest, and we're talking about the film in which he stars, Bag It, Is Your Life Too Plastic? Jeb is every person who, you know, he and his partner are having a baby, and he starts becoming aware not only of plastic bags, but plastic's presence in our world. And what happens after you take that plastic bag, and we do it, many of us, all the time, you get something and then it's gone. You throw it away in 12 seconds or 5 seconds or 6 seconds. Where does it go? Well, a lot of it is not recyclable, and it winds up killing a lot of marine life. And, well, you've heard about the amount of plastic in the ocean that it's, what is it, two Texases are in the ocean with plastic that ain't going anywhere for a long time. to your phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during our 9 o'clock hour, you may want to read this before we talk about it tomorrow so you'll be even more informed than you already are. The Education of a President, it's the New York Times cover story for this week on President Obama. Peter Baker is the author. He spent an hour with the president and with, well, much more time than that with many of his advisors. He's a White House correspondent for The Times and a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. The Education of a President, what Barack Obama has done and hasn't, and what being president has done to him. That will be the first hour of our program tomorrow. All right, let's welcome phone calls. We have many of them for our guest, and we do want to remind you that this documentary, Bagot, is going to be shown in Milwaukee at the Urban Ecology Center this coming Saturday. You can call them to get tickets, and there will be a discussion. Jeb is coming in for the discussion, so you can sit and talk with him about this after you see the film. Patty is our first caller from Green Bay. Hey, Patty.
Hi, Kathleen. Congratulations on the fundraising drive. It's really great.
Isn't that great? Thank
yes.
you.
I just want to ask Jeb a question. As I was drinking my coffee with the plastic lid
uh-huh.
and then thinking about the straws that I have in the cupboard and that my kids drink out of
uh-huh.
and the plastic cups that, you know, we got at the Badger game. And so do I have to get rid of all those plastics, Jeb, so that we don't get sick?
Well, I don't think that you have to be that drastic. You know, this is sort of the rule that I go by. I try not to. Once I started working on the movie and discovering this stuff, I really don't like to take in any unnecessary plastic into my house. But we have things that are already there, and honestly, I think if you're not heating the stuff up, you're not microwaving it, you're not putting hot liquids in it. You know, I think it's okay.
Okay.
But you do, as you know, we had a baby.
Yeah.
And I do just, if there are things that he has, things that people give him, hard plastic toys,
mm-hmm.
I like to be cautious, and because he puts everything in his mouth.
Yeah.
And chews on everything. And so those are the things that I worry about a little more.
Okay.
All right, Patty.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Here's an email from Jeanette in Milwaukee. I'm against any plastic, yet I depend on these bags for my garbage contents. What could I use instead? I can't recall what we used to wrap garbage in before plastic bags. Can you?
Boy, I don't think I remember life before a plastic garbage bag.
Right.
I'm not old enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. You know, if you don't live somewhere where you can just take your garbage out and throw it in a dumpster, I guess you really do depend on those heavy plastic bags. But now, do you think she's talking about the big black plastic bags or the little shopping bags?
I think she's talking about the things you put in your garbage can,
yeah.
Those plastic ones that kind of fit, you know. They're usually white, and they got a thing on the top that you can squeeze and then the garbage doesn't come out?
You know, look, I don't think that anybody can be perfect on this stuff. And I think, like I say in the film, I sort of went through a whole trajectory of my thoughts about plastic. And my first reaction was, plastic is terrible. You know, I've got to get it out of my life. I don't want to use it anymore. And that's, I think, what a lot of people feel. And then I sort of went past that and I thought, okay, plastic's not terrible for everything. You know, it does have a place, and it's an amazing material, right? I mean, that's why we use it for everything. It's cheap, it's strong, it's light. So you kind of have to just pick and choose and just use your brain. You know, that's really the message, is think about how you use plastic and where it's going to go and what the impact is. And as long as people are doing that, you go to the store and you think about it instead of just buying everything without thinking about the ramifications.
Right. Use your brain. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, use your brain.
Use your brain.
I think we could all stand to use our brains just a little more.
I'm with you. We're going to use that for our next pledge drive, which won't happen. We don't want to scare you for a long, long time.
Well, congratulations.
Use your brain.
That sounds like you guys did really well.
We did, yeah. Great. Thank you. It was good. Thanks very much, Patty, for your call. Mike is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Did in bisphenol A sprayed inside of cans to prevent corrosion, especially with pasteurized stuff. I used to buy Glenmuir tomato sauce from the Outpost. It was labeled organic, so I thought it would be good for me because tomatoes are supposed to be good for men. But I called up the company, and they said that they did spray those cans full of that stuff. And at the same time, tomatoes were pasteurized, so they were putting it hot into the can. So I stopped buying this stuff. But apparently canned goods have this in them.
Yeah, that was a real shocker for me. First of all, I'd never heard of this chemical. And then I found out that, you know, okay, so you think if you avoid plastic, right, the sensible thing would be, well, a can that's made out of metal. And then you find out, like you're saying, that most cans, I mean 90 or 95% of cans are lined with BPA. It's absolutely... crazy to me.
Yeah.
Hot. And the product's hot.
I'm sorry, Mike, what did you say?
I say they fill those cans with hot product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're getting BPA. If you're eating canned food a lot, you're getting a dose of BPA. That was one of the things that we did in my little experiment. I ate nothing but canned food. And my BPA levels went up in 2 days.
And is there a movement to stop that, to stop spraying cans with that?
Yeah, there is, but, you know, it has to come from consumers. And you know, you calling the company, that's something that people should really be doing. The more they hear from people and people saying, I'm not going to buy your product anymore. I like your product, but I don't want to have the BPA. That's what companies need to hear. We all have to become a little more active.
Mm-hmm.
That's what changes things. You know, one of the things is when industry finds out that they're going to lose money, right? That really works.
Sure. Thanks, Mike, for your call. We go to Tom next from New Holstein. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. We use stainless steel water bottles and since we found out about the bisphenol A, and we don't heat things that have plastic, but... we use the plastic bags. We kind of get them to keep up as we need them, but we line our waste baskets around the house with it and goes out in the trash that way, tied up and wrapped up. Does that seem like a responsible way to approach it, or would you have another idea?
No, I think that's responsible. Like I was saying, you know, it's at a certain point, we all do depend on these things, and to wrap up your garbage and not have it... I mean, if you put your garbage in a paper bag, it's going to get wet and fall apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are issues... You know, I live in Colorado. We have issues with bears. So I think being responsible that way... You know, the other thing to think about is minimizing your trash. So you do put less of those bags out. You do buy less of them because we all are so accustomed to buying so much stuff and having so much excess and packaging. Did you quote the statistic? The average American contributes 800 pounds of packaging to the waste stream every year.
I don't know if I used that one or not. Isn't that something? 800 pounds.
800 pounds. So, you know, reducing, when they say reduce, reuse, recycle, reduce is the first one.
Mm-hmm. It sure is.
And then reusing what you have and then recycling. So, yeah, I use a plastic garbage bag. I'm not gonna pretend that I've figured out a way to have a plastic-free life.
But you have remarkably reduced your waste, haven't you? I mean, it's phenomenal how much less.
Yeah, I met a guy, he's in the film, Dave Kamidas, who was doing an experiment in L.A. where he was saving his...
Yes.
Right?
All that, yeah.
He saved his trash for a whole year.
Yeah.
And one of the really cool things that he did that I got excited about was composting. But he was composting in his basement with worms. So I've gotten myself a worm bin. And you know, it's a little bit of a controversy because I want to keep them in the house, and it's not going over so well. But they don't really smell. It smells a little earthy. But those guys will eat your compost, your food scraps, a lot of them, and your paper.
Oh, I didn't know they ate paper.
They eat paper.
Huh.
Yeah, you can even give them junk mail.
Huh.
So one thing that junk mail is good for.
Yeah.
Worms. And then you can put it out in your flowers or whatever.
Right. Better thing is no junk mail, but that's hard to achieve.
That's a whole other documentary.
Yeah. I want to talk because a lot of the pictures of what happens to this and how a lot of this plastic winds up killing so many marine mammals and seabirds. It just gets to you when you see it in the film, doesn't it? It's so sad.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking about animals, you know, the idea that animals are so, that they have nothing to do with this, really. You know, animals don't make plastic. Animals don't use plastic. And yet, We're filling the ocean full of plastic, and not only are they getting entangled, which we've all seen the pictures of animals with, you know, that have gotten themselves caught in plastic rings or bags or whatever, but then they're eating it.
Mm.
And if it's not killing them right away, it's killing them slowly. You take an animal out in the ocean, we can talk about that, the gyre, as people call it, the garbage patch. But this plastic is breaking down, and it's getting smaller and smaller to the size where marine life think that it's plankton or food.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think they're getting food. They think they're getting nutrition. They're getting plastic. They're filling their bellies full of this stuff. And the stuff that we have in the film of the albatross feeding their chicks plastic bottle caps, and it's just...
I know.
I just want to say to people, anyone who's... this stuff is sort of overwhelming, and it's very depressing when you learn about it. But one of the things we really tried to do with the movie was give people, like, show them the facts, show them what's going on, and not sugarcoat that, but do it in a way that's positive, if that makes sense. Like, have a little something there that shows people that we can do something about this.
Right. Yes, right.
I mean, why else do it, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
We can all just sit around and say, hey, the world's coming to an end. Or we can say, hey, we've got some serious problems out there. Let's do something.
Right. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Paul in Duluth. Hi.
Hi. This is a fast-moving show, and while I've been on hold, I put my stuff together here. But first of all, I have to protest feeding junk mail to earthworms. That constitutes abuse of earthworms. And I'm just kidding, okay?
Okay, Paul.
Yeah. I thought you were from PETA.
No, I'm not at all. Here's the thing. I use, and this was already mentioned by one caller, I'm pretty careful. When I go shopping, I pretty much avoid packaged food. I buy as much fresh food as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And I monitor, the balance between paper bags and plastic bags, because I hate the idea of buying a roll of trash bags. It's just such a waste of money.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're buying something to deliberately throw it away. It just doesn't make any sense. So anyway, you get a paper bag, and I take a plastic bag on the outside of it and put it in my little trash can. And then I take another plastic bag and push it down in the middle of the paper bag, so if there's anything moist in there, it's not going to soak through. So I don't have a mess. The thing about the canned vegetables, the deal with the tomatoes, and I heard a story about this, growers that are producing tomatoes specifically for canning are producing a higher acid tomato, and the reason they do that is to prevent botulism. And what they found was that it gave the inside of the bear can gave the tomatoes a tinny or off taste. Mm-hmm. And I'm not justifying the use of this material. I'm just saying that's why they do it.
Yeah.
Those were just a couple of things I thought I would bring up for you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's not simple to find solutions. You know, that's a great point about the tomatoes. And the BPA is in the can for a very good reason. You know, these chemicals aren't just put in plastic because someone wants to hurt us. These chemicals are put in things because they work. They do. They're very good at what they're supposed to do. And so, obviously, you know, a BPA line can doesn't rust and it doesn't give you that tin taste in your tomatoes. The problem is now that we're learning that these chemicals aren't good for us. Now we have to figure out other things.
Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Arlene from New Berlin. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have one solution as far as tomatoes go. It's about time people in America start canning their own food and using glass jars. My mother did that back in the 1940s, was a worker full-time, kept a house, raised a family. And people tell me today they don't have time. Unfortunately, I don't believe that. If we would can a lot of our own food, I think we would solve the problem. As far as garbage goes, my mother used to, if there was any stuff left over, she'd wrap it, get all the water or whatever was out of it, and wrap it in a newspaper and put it in the garbage can. Mm-hmm. And then the garbage collectors would come and pick it up, and it would go in the wherever they put it, and it would biodegrade itself, or sometimes she'd put it in her garden, and it would be recycled in the garden. Not gravy or anything like that, or fat, but, you know, like a peel from vegetables and other stuff that she didn't use. She would wrap it, or she'd put it in the garden, and then she'd have a compost pile. And I'll take my answer off the air.
You know, Arlene, though, before you go, when you talk about that, I think, oh, what a noble idea, canning things ourselves. And then the second thought is, that sounds like a lot of work.
It isn't. It's very simple.
Really?
I mean, my mother came from Europe, and in Europe they do all that stuff, and it doesn't take a lot. Nothing better than a fresh canned tomato. I mean, I used to love it when she'd do that. She'd make her own jam. She'd can her peaches and all that stuff. And it's like, why can't we do that?
Do we need to do that, Chip?
Well, I think Arlene has this is great because here you're looking at your mother doing this, the 40s. That's not that long ago, right?
Right.
And that was probably normal. And still in some places it probably is, but you know, there's all this talk about how bad our diets are in this country. You know, we're filling ourselves full of all kinds of stuff, not just these chemicals, but we're not eating well. And the whole movement towards eating locally and eating fresh. I mean, I think it's all tied together with doing things like, you know, canning your own tomatoes. What could be better than that?
That sounds great.
It just sounds like a good idea all around. Yes, it is a little more work. Yes, you have to do something. But other than that, I think if we all, you know, we make our own baby food.
Do you really?
Yeah. Huh. And it's easy. Huh. You know, you steam vegetables. He loves vegetables. It's not that hard. It just takes a little time at night to put some stuff on the stove and do other things.
Thanks, Arlene, for the call. Chris in Butternut, hi.
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 I just had a question. Don't you think we're kind of like fighting a losing battle with these chemicals they use? I mean, yeah, DDT and every other pesticide they use in farm crops and stuff like that. Now you got BPA and everything else that you find out that's cancerous that big business and government, you know, all that, probably just to whatever, preserve their goods or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think it's a losing battle. You know, I think that especially with something where it's really, in a way, this is a new thing that we've learned about. I mean, there are people who have been saying these chemicals aren't good for a long time, but right now it's becoming a real mainstream thing. And, you know, it's like smoking. I mean, you can't smoke in public anymore. And 20 years ago, do you think that would have been a realistic thing to achieve? So there are little battles that we can win. And the chemical companies they're doing the same thing as they did with tobacco. They're denying it, and they're digging in their heels. But if enough people get upset enough, and especially when you're talking about our children, I think we can definitely change stuff.
Where is it, Seattle, where people had on the ballot, was it deposit for plastic bags or getting rid of them?
No, it was a fee.
It was a fee. Yep. And what happened there, Jeb?
What happened was the city council passed a resolution to charge for plastic. I forget if it was paper and plastic or if it was just plastic. What happened was the lobbying arm of the plastic industry, the American Chemistry Council, came to Seattle, and they started a campaign to gather signatures. I've been told that they hired people to gather signatures. Some came from California. You know, you can have anybody do it. And you get a certain amount of signatures, and it has to go to a vote. So they did that. And then they pumped a total of $1.4 million into a campaign to not let this thing pass.
Mm.
And they ended up defeating it. You know, they've done it in California as well. Look, you see it with an industry that doesn't want to lose market share. And they see the plastic bag battle as sort of the beginning of a domino principle happening.
Yeah, it also seems inevitable, really, though, doesn't it?
I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think eventually it's going to happen, but they're definitely going to fight it.
And tell me where it has happened. We have an email from somebody who talks about Toronto. Also, you went to Ireland for this film.
Yeah.
And what happened there?
Ireland had a huge problem with plastic bags. They were in the rivers, and they were just everywhere. And so they started charging. They called it the plastic tax. And the first year, they reduced their usage of plastic bags by 90%.
Goodness.
And we're talking, you know, it wasn't nothing, but it was I forget what they started with, 30 cents or something. It's enough to get people to think when they're at the register. They've done it in Washington, D.C.
Hmm.
5 cents.
Really?
Yep. And it works.
It just
changes it from, it changes your thought process.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just going to take this and I'm not even going to think about it to, oh, that's 5 cents. I'm going to think about it now.
Yeah. We are welcoming phone calls for Jeb. He is featured in the documentary Bag It, the award-winning film Is Your Life Too Plastic? He's from Colorado, and he's going to be coming to Milwaukee this weekend. On Saturday, there's going to be a showing of the film, and you can see it for $10 admission charge at the Urban Ecology Center, which is here in Milwaukee. The film will be shown at 7 o'clock this Saturday night, and then Jeb will be there, and then there will be a talk back following the film. More phone calls momentarily. A couple lines are open, 800-486-8655, or you can send a message at talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we return to phone calls. Joan in Milwaukee, hi.
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 Well, a different lady answered some of the earlier questions. The newspaper was what we wrapped our garbage in. My mother canned everything except beans. Green beans were the most easy to get botulism. So she didn't can green beans.
Hmm.
Then after the war, there was the advent of the freezer. And I can't picture what we froze things in because I don't think plastic was that prevalent yet. I'd like to ask a question, though. Can we tell when we open a can whether there's BP in it? Is it the white-lined cans? And I did call one company, and they said, yeah, they were still using BP.
Mm-hmm.
They made one of the healthier soups that my grandson really likes, but they sent me a bunch of coupons for that soup. So I'll...
Okay. Thanks, Joan.
Well, to answer Joan's question, I can't tell by opening a can. You know, like I said, they say 95% of cans have it, so even organic stuff. So if you think this healthy soup, the cans were lined with BPA.
Let me see if I can get to this email. Well, I think I know essentially what it said. From George in Ashland, I know you have a dog, or at least you did in the film. I have a dog.
We do. She's actually sitting right next to me on the couch.
Oh, is she really?
She is.
What's her name?
Bucci.
Bucci?
Yeah.
Hi, Bucci.
Bucci, she's right here.
Oh, how sweet. Oh, now I have a better image. I should have asked you about your dog earlier. I would have thought of the two of you together. Now, when Bucci goes to the bathroom, I use the plastic bag that the newspaper comes in the morning. And the question was, from somebody who does the same thing, does that help decompose a bag better? Is there another way to clean up dog mess?
Well, that's another tricky one. That's a nasty business that we all have to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are times when I've used a newspaper. But if you're out, for example... I was on a hike yesterday with her, and I brought one of these little bags. Now, nothing decomposes when it goes into the landfill. So that was another thing that I had to get my head around. You know, we've got these new sorts of corn bags, corn plastic. Do you guys have those?
Maybe so, but I don't know. I haven't bought them.
They're supposedly a biodegradable bag.
Oh.
But if you take it and you fill it with dog poop and you put it in the garbage, it's going to go to the landfill, and nothing decomposes in a landfill.
Oh.
So, you know, that's not really... It's just, I think, important for people to know. You know, I used to think my cardboard coffee cups, if I threw them in the garbage, those were somehow going to decompose.
Right.
They don't.
Oh.
You know, because A... they take these landfills and they just kind of seal them over, and that's what they're meant to do. You know, stuff's not meant to break down. And B, coffee cups, that's a whole other issue if they've got a little bit of plastic in them as well. But one thing that I think is smart is to use those bags that you get. You know, even if you don't take a single bag from the grocery store, you're going to end up with a drawer full of plastic, whether it's from the inside of cereal boxes or what your bread comes in or the newspaper or you name it. And why not reuse those things and use them for the dog food?
Okay. All right. I feel better.
Yes.
And it is true. At one point in the film, somebody's opens drawers were all like that. You open, I've got at least three drawers filled with plastic bags, you know. They're going to be there for years, I think.
Yeah, and you just think, oh, I'll use these at some point.
Right, right.
And there's no way you can use them all.
No, absolutely no way.
Yeah.
Melinda is our next caller. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, this is a great show. I have a tip and a comment. The tip, I reuse all my bread bags when I pack my husband's lunch, and basically have completely cut out the need for Ziploc bags in my house. The comment I have, I don't think a lot of people are aware, and this is alarming to me, that the scrubbing beads in a lot of the facial cleansers and body cleansers and all this new exfoliating line of things is polyethylene, and it's little beads of plastic.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that there's a natural alternative. A magazine I was reading a women's magazine, actually was suggesting that as one of their great finds, you know, beauty finds, and I actually plan on writing in to dispute that completely, but I was just wondering what the guest had to say about that. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Melinda.
Thanks, Melinda. Yeah, I actually, when I was doing my experiment, we tried to get the nastiest looking stuff we could to fill me up with these chemicals. And one of the things we found was this body wash with these plastic. I couldn't believe it. But they're these little, they look like little bubbles, little beads, and they're plastic. And they are, they exfoliate, right? So I guess they're meant to take a little skin off.
Mm-hmm.
But can, you know, if you think about that, plastic, it's a petroleum product with other chemicals possibly in there. You're putting it on your skin. You're heating it up. You're heating your skin up. You're opening your pores in the shower. And if you do that every day, if you jump in the shower every morning and you expose yourself to those chemicals, it can't be good. You know, I'm not claiming to know exactly what it would do to you, but I would think that not doing it is better than doing it.
Doug is next in Madison. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
Kathleen. I wanted to build on this comment about reusing plastic and, of course, reducing it in that sense, but also doing it with a twist of something that maybe makes it safer to reuse plastic bags in the home. What I do is I wash out the plastic bags, and plastics are polymers. They are made out of monomers, and those things tend to come to the surface of plastics. I'm a chemist and been looking at the blooming. It's called a blooming process where the plasticizers come to the surface of any plastic. And by washing them, I think you can remove perhaps some of the more harmful components and effects that come out of the plastics. And so not only are you reusing them, you're actually making a plastic bag safer. I would argue that a reused, washed plastic bag is probably better for you for putting food in than a fresh plastic bag is, because it's had these plasticizers just leaching out and coming to the surface of the plastic because of the nature of plastic.
Oh.
That's really interesting, actually. It's good to have a scientist.
Yes, it is.
So we just have a simple bag dryer that we keep on the counter. We wash out the plastic bags, swish around a little soap in them, rinse them out, and put them on a bag dryer, dry them out. And I think it's actually a better plastic bag than a fresh plastic bag is.
That's
and
good.
And you're using less plastic.
Yeah. Doug, here's an email that's come in. We got you're a chemist, so you can probably answer this, from John in Milwaukee. Well, two of them. Are there any plastics made from organic materials? And the second question from John, I heard freezing plastic is dangerous.
I hate to overstate what I know. I think there are some certainly biodegradable plastics. I couldn't name them. Freezing them, we use freezer bags, and kind of, we do the same thing. We freeze food
rinse
in
them.
Plastics, but then, you know, when we go to reuse them, we wash them out again and freeze them with what I would argue is a safer bag. So
yeah.
I don't know. Freezing tends to slow down a lot of chemical processes, and I would think it's certainly not worse, maybe a little better to put something in a plastic bag if you're going to freeze something.
Okay. And what about organic bags? You were mentioning those corn plastic bags.
Yeah, there is vegetable-based plastic. So I don't know exactly how you do it, but essentially you substitute petroleum for vegetable starch that most in this country tends to come from corn. It can come from other things, potatoes and whatever way you get it. But that's sort of a growing movement on its own. We did investigate it a little bit in the movie and then decided that it was too much of a whole nother topic,
right,
to put in our film. But there are issues associated with that too. Now, one of them is that you're using corn. That's an industrial crop, and that's a complicated issue right there.
There are a lot of issues with corn.
Right, and you're using food, a food source possibly for plastic. You are using fossil fuels to grow the corn. The other issue is those things are compostable, but only if you have a real industrial composting facility where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Which most places don't yet. you know, the idea that you can put it in your garden and it's going to go away is not true.
Right.
The thing is, the message that I got was, instead of trying to find something else to use and throw away, just try not to use stuff that you don't need to use and you're just going to throw out.
Well, and that brings us to the end. Perfect. You have a great sense of timing because you're an actor.
That's right. We're
out of time. Thanks, Jeb. Have a good time in Milwaukee.
Kathleen, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Jeb Barrier, he's featured in the film Bag It, Is Your Life Too Plastic? He's going to be in Milwaukee at the Urban Ecology Center this Saturday at 7 o'clock. The film will be shown, and then Jeb will be talking with you about this. So that's this Saturday. Tickets are $10. And you should call the Urban Ecology Center for more information. Thank you. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour. Until tomorrow.